The Israel Report with Rolene Marks for the latest information and the stories behind the news.
Rolene Marks, how are you?
Good afternoon, Howard. Always a pleasure to start my week with you.
Absolutely awesome. And even though it is the afternoon, you don't mind that we played that Moderni, that Omer Adam. Isn't that a great song?
You know what? My philosophy is be grateful all the time.
Absolutely. Any time of the day or not. Nothing wrong exactly. with that at all. Rolene, we have a lot to talk about.
We do have a lot to talk about.
All right. Starting off with the situation at the Kotel. Tell me what – just give us a bit of background. What happened here?
Okay, so basically for the last couple of years, diaspora Jews, I know that the Jewish Agency's Board of Governors and the different Zionist organizations as well as members of the government have been lobbying very hard to have an area of the Kotel designated for more pluralistic worship, for more egalitarian worship. So, the current situation as it stands is that you have a men's side and a women's side separated by Mechitza. But it was decided after a lot of negotiation that there will be an area, not necessarily at the Kotel where we see it. I think it's actually off to the side. Mm.
Sort of the Robinson's Arch. So it's facing the Kotel, it's to the right where those – it's almost like there's the bleachers, almost a rickety platform. But it's around that area.
Yeah, so it's not at the Kotel per se. And this was set aside for egalitarian purposes where you could have mixed services, etc. And everybody seemed to be happy that we reached some kind of consensus, because things have been very hot at the Kotel in the past. Both sides, no side is more responsible than the other. Both sides have kind of provoked each other when it comes to how they proceed to pray at the Kotel. You've got a woman of the wall, some liking to wear talits and wrap tefillin, and you've got the more traditional or orthodox who prefer not to, and there has been breakouts of violence between both parties. So this was established so that it would be inclusive for everybody. However, yesterday the Netanyahu government, or Netanyahu himself, has pandered to the ultra-Orthodox who have said that this is not going to fly anymore. And they are reneging on this deal. So it really has upset a lot of people. It's upset a lot of Israelis who feel that, you know, it's not necessarily representative of Israel. And also, again, the fear that Israel is becoming more and more and more religious and less democratic. It has also upset members of the government who've worked very, very hard in trying to find a solution. And we've heard from Chaver Knesset Michael Oren, who was the former ambassador to the United States. And we've heard from various Jewish or Zionist organizations who have said that this is a serious step back for Zionism. Including Natan Sharansky, who's a human rights icon, and also the current chairman of the Jewish Agency, who has really, really excoriated Benjamin Netanyahu. And the result as of today was that the Jewish Agency's Board of Government will be suspending their meeting with Prime Minister Netanyahu, or their dinner with Prime Minister Netanyahu tonight, because of this decision, saying, please go back to the original agreement.
Right, and we are going to be speaking to their spokesperson, Avi Meir, in around about 20 minutes. Rolene, can I just get a sense from you, where do the various segments of Israeli society sit on this? So we know where the ultra-Orthodox sit, we know where the Haredim sit because they've objected to it and they've been successful. We know where the complete opposite extreme, which is, let's say, the reform movements, the conservative movements, we know where they sit. But there's a massive, massive group in the middle of lesser religious, more traditional, religious Zionists. Where does everybody else sit in this regard?
Well, you know what? I was actually, strange enough, listening to a podcast by that featured somebody who is known to be not just a religious Zionist, but very, very nationalistic. I'm not going to mention his name. And he actually spoke, and he lives on the Mount of Olives. And he actually spoke a couple of weeks ago about going down to the Kotel, and it was more pluralistic. And he had no problem with that. You know, many feel that specific space was put aside for people. A lot of people feel that it should be much more inclusive, that a resolution was reached for all. Why do we have to now create dissent and discord? A lot of people, including religious Zionists, are very, very disappointed by some of the violence that has broken out between the two extremes on either side. And object very, very strongly to the way both sides are treating each other. Having said that, there are some people who say, yeah, but why should there be egalitarian services? It upsets, it detracts from Jewish law. But does it? Does it really? And I think that many worked very, very hard to find a middle-of-the-road solution. And I think Michael Oren and various others in Knesset speak for all of us in the middle who say, why can't we be as accommodating as possible? We can't have a situation where one group has monopoly over the Kotel and how we pray there. We have to find a solution. Do we not have enough on our hands without having to resort to this?
Dean saying, did you read what Caroline he's saying Caroline Glickman, but it's Caroline Glick, I'm assuming, wrote. They still have the space, but the access is through a different gate. They never removed the prayer area.
Well, this is only a decision that came about yesterday. So we will still see how things will change on the ground. But it is, you know, even if nothing changes on the ground, just the concept of this is hurtful to a lot of people. You know, we discussed last week that we're losing a lot of our Jewish youth, that there is this huge chasm between diaspora Jews and Israelis. And this creates an even further chasm. Is it going to create the absolute breaking apart of relations between Israel and the diaspora community? Like Haaretz have said, you know, their headline was Netanyahu to diaspora Jews drop dead. That is very, very like a hysterical and knee-jerk reaction. No, it's not going to result in that. But what it is going to result in is perhaps a change in the diaspora support for Netanyahu. And what it is going to do is to create a further mistrust and a deeper chasm between certain more liberal Jews and Israel.
So it's interesting. Jenny saying, Judaism hasn't survived 3,000 years by catering to the lowest common denominator. Why can't the liberals be tolerant? Which is interesting. You know, it's always an argument that, or a different way of thinking that, in fact, I've said this to you when we discussed the El Al situation last week. Would we be more tolerant if it was another religion that said, you know, this isn't the way things are done in our religion, please respect that? And the answer is probably we would be more tolerant of somebody else. But that said, we aren't other religions, and I think we do grapple internally with it. And I have to tell you, I'm finding this very, very difficult, because to me, and I'm not I'm Orthodox. I'm Shomer Shabbat. I don't daven in a mixed service. But I'm very, very worried that we're sending a message. I think the ultimate message that we need to send to a fellow Jew, to a fellow person, is that we accept them no matter what. And unfortunately, this does send the wrong message. And I don't know how to restore that balance. I do hear the preservation argument. I get it. I hear it. That, you know, the halakha is the halakha, and that's it. You don't compromise that. But on the other hand, I really do think that we risk losing major parts of Israeli society as well as diaspora Jewry. And I can't, in my mind, reconcile those two.
I'm 100% in agreement with you. I mean, for me, I'm a Chabadnik, my rabbi, and I'm going to give him a shout out here, Rabbi Roddle of Chabad Norwood. it's not the way, you know, I'm used to things be done. Having said that, I think we need to respect the fact that some people identify differently, and we need to respect that fact. The fact that a space has been created so that everybody can be inclusive. You know, I even know of religious synagogues in South Africa that are much more accepting of people, because as long as you are bringing the Jewish people to Torah.
What would have happened in South Africa all those years ago if the rabbis had stood up and said, under no circumstances do you drive to shul on a Friday night? If the rabbis had done that, if they had imposed the letter of the law, I'm not sure that we would have seen the revival in this country that we've seen.
I'm in agreement with you. I think that this is very, very disappointing. I think let people who are Reform or Masorti or who prefer a more pluralistic or more egalitarian service, let them have this space.
All right. I'd love to hear from our listeners. 34519. In fact, there's an article, and I don't know if you've read it, written by Yossi Klein Halevi, and it's on Times of Israel. I'm going to post it to the Facebook page, and he tells the most amazing story. Of a non-religious, I think it was an Iraqi Jew, who was involved in the liberation and the unification of Jerusalem. But as he got to the Kotel, he was actually shot and was taken to hospital, had many, many months of recovery. And on the way home from hospital, he asked to be driven to the Kotel. It was just obviously the most, a pivotal moment for him leaving hospital, part of the liberation. He was one of the first people through, but unfortunately was shot, very seriously injured. And in the chaos of him leaving the hospital, he didn't put on a kippah on his head. And as he got there, somebody was very, very intolerant, basically, and almost smacked him and said, "How can you come to the wall without your kippah?" And he felt so excluded. Here was a guy that had virtually given his life for this, and I'm not telling the story in order to juxtapose the Haredim with non-Haredim. It happened to be a Haredi person who said that to, made that comment to him, and he basically never went back to the wall. It's just absolutely fascinating. Yossi Klein Halevi, he wrote that book like Dreamers. Very, very interesting.
Well, I've got two comments coming in now on social media. And the one is, when the legions of Jews stream home, we're not going to stand at the airport and ask them what stream of Judaism they follow. And another is, we are post-Holocaust. Nobody divided us up when we went into gas chambers. Why should we be divided up when we
mm-hmm.
pray?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Basically, why are we being pulled apart with how we pray? Why don't we just tolerate everybody?
Interesting. And Mark saying, but Judaism isn't democratic. It's a long conversation. We're going to continue having it in various forms over this week. I do want to move on.
Just to answer Mark, Israel is still democratic.
Indeed. Please tell me what's going on in Hebron, because here, you know, this is what I love about us as a people, is we'll divide ourselves and turn on each other, but the minute somebody else starts with us, we're not having it. Tell me about UNESCO and Hebron.
Well, the Palestinians last week put forward a motion to UNESCO to claim the what they call the Ibrahimi Mosque, what we call the Cave of the Patriarchs, or Ma'arat HaMachpelah, as a Palestinian World Heritage Site.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they went further, because basically Israel challenged them on that, they went further to say they have to claim it as a World Heritage Site because there's vandalism and violence and the ill treatment of Palestinians. So now UNESCO would like to come into Hebron in the investigations to possibly include the Cave of the Patriarchs as a Palestinian Heritage Site. And Israel is having none of that. Israel has said that they are politicizing holy sites, and they want to put in another clause that Israel is not, doesn't just have a sovereign power over Jerusalem, but that we have no ties to Hebron as well. So this has been a last minute addition into this resolution, which has already proven to be extremely hurtful to us and has elicited some very, very strong objection. Now, the irony is that where are they meeting? They're meeting in Krakow, in Poland, for their annual assembly, which to me is just a hideous irony.
Absolutely.
And within the resolution, there is sort of international acceptance that the Cave of the Patriarchs is a Muslim holy site. And now, to go further, this would say that it questions our sovereignty over this historical site. So the Israeli government are saying absolutely not are we allowing UNESCO into Hebron because they are politicizing something. Mm-hmm. They say that it is again, this horrible tactic of the Palestinians to claim more and more religious sites as their own and say that we have no sovereignty or we have no claim to them. And I think this is going to be very, very interesting because, first of all, I think if they allow this motion to be introduced, it's going to be interesting to see which countries do vote for this. We do know that it's been proposed by the Arab bloc. It will probably be supported by the Arab bloc and certain African countries, read between the lines. But what Israel's ambassador to UNESCO, Carmel Shammah HaKohen, has said that they will not allow UNESCO into Hebron, and as a matter of principle, Israel will not provide legitimization to any Palestinian political move under the guise of culture and heritage.
I think it's amazing. I think it's absolutely right not to allow them in. I think they haven't shown themselves to have zero credibility. So why should they be allowed to go there? Even if they have, you know, the counter argument is, well, they've got more ammunition to say, well, Israel is oppressive and not allowing freedom of movement. Well, in fact, they shouldn't. They should not allow freedom of movement for an enemy that is there to undermine them. I don't know what your thoughts are, really.
No, my thoughts are also don't allow them in.
Yeah.
Don't allow them in because they have continued to pass these horrendous resolutions that are extremely hurtful. I can't even begin to tell you the ire I feel when I see a UN car driving about. They have this absolute pathological obsession with Israel and voting against us. No, you know what? Your privileges should be taken away.
I agree. Finally, and we've got a very short time, unfortunately, to talk about it. There was a gay pride march in Chicago. Jews were told they were not allowed to walk with a pride flag because it had Magen David on it.
Well, here's a fascinating comparison, because in Turkey, there were two gay women, and you can go into them, a friend of mine, Paul Gross's Facebook page, who had the rainbow flag with the traditional moon and star symbolizing Islam, and they weren't turned away in Turkey, which is not exactly known for its supreme tolerance. Mm-hmm. But what is hideous is this intersectionality, which is playing out and playing out and playing out. On a daily basis, it's bringing anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism, which to me is the same thing, into every sector of society. The excuse given for this was that it would inflame people, that the organizers of this march are pro-Palestinian, they're anti-Zionist. Well, please, ladies, please bring yourself to Gaza with your rainbow flags and have yourself a march in Gaza City and see how long your anti-Israel, anti-Semitic, pro-Palestinian march is going to last in Gaza.
Yeah, because apparently they didn't feel safe in Chicago at the march because there was a Magen David there. Can you imagine how
safe?
When
you see a crane When you see a crane with a hook, let me know how safe you feel there.
On that note, on that very powerful note, Rolien Marks, that's where we're going to leave it. Absolutely love that. Time is 5:30. We're going to